I'm going to call this meeting of the House Early Childhood and Family Supports Committee to order for Thursday, May 11th. And our item of business today is going to be a public hearing on Senate Bill 1051. I'm going to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1051. And Zena, would you please alert us to what we've all read it, I'm sure, but just so you summarize it for us, it'd be nice.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1051 prohibits a provision and an instrument conveying real property that restricts the use of property as a certified or registered family child care home. It prohibits enforcement of a condominium or homeowners association restrictions of use of a unit as a certified or registered family child care home. It applies to instruments conveying fee title to real property that are executed and provisions of governing documents and guidelines that are adopted on or after the effective date. There is no fiscal impact and no revenue impact and no amendment.
Okay. And Zena, anytime you want to, if you just want to grab the gavel and hit it over here, shut me down, it's okay too. I don't mind. So to remind committee members, we passed House Bill 3447, which was dealing with the same area, and that bill has moved from the House over to the Senate. This is the bill that started on the Senate side and moved over to the House, and there are some differences in the two bills. So there's not an intent that we're going to necessarily move this bill, but we're going to have the conversation to see what those differences are, and then if the committee thinks there's something more, if we wanted to try to do something more, that we'd do it with the bill that's had the Senate do it over there. I've talked to Senator Boquist, and he's all right with whatever we come up with, so that's the reason we're having this discussion today.
Okay.
So we have four people, and by the way, Senator Representative Vile has agreed to be here since we work with his amendments and that, so if there's questions in that, we can just make sure we get that clarified before we do anything else. So I have four people. We have three seats, or you can all four come up and we have four seats. It's up to it's up to those who have signed up to testify. Does everybody? So James and Stacy and Andrea and Tracy, you're all going to come up? Why not? I mean, a lot of other committees, we have four chairs, so.
Well, Chair Lively, members of the committee, my name is James Barta. I'm the Legislative Director for Children First for Oregon. And I believe this is a topic, as you've already addressed, that we've talked about before. But I just want to emphasize that I'm here because child care is important not only for the parents, but for the children. It gets better health and educational outcomes. And as a state, we should be doing everything we can to reduce the barriers to bringing more providers. And as was talked about in yesterday's Ways and Means hearing, we're seeing a drop in some types of providers. But I also want to point out that the state ensures that there is no prohibitions for anyone having a foster care home. And so I see this as a similar idea. Why should we have prohibitions to allow people to be in the business of child care when it's so desperately needed for the children, for the parents? And that's all I think I need to say on this.
So I hope you don't want to think we'll answer that question today, but it's a very good question. Just checking.
Mr. Chair, at least he didn't start out today with dead Bill walking.
that was encouraging.
That's encouraging. Yeah.
Good point.
You were disgusted.
I know. Thank you, James.
Just being honest in my question.
Thank you. Yes.
Chair Lively, members of the committee, Stacey Cowan with SEIU Local 503. I'm in here in support of Senate Bill 1051. I would like to note, however, as it's currently drafted, it actually doesn't include SEIU's child care providers. So we, of course, would love to see the bill amended to include SEIU child care providers. And as a reminder, I know we've spoke about this before, SEIU represents what we're now calling regulated subsidy child care providers. It's sometimes been referred to as the friends, family, neighbor providers or license-exempt child care providers. So it's really important to know when we're talking about legislation like this that the child care providers that we're talking about actually vary quite a bit. The folks that we represent are distinctly different than, for example, the folks represented by AFSCME. The providers that we represent usually have a close relationship with the family. They're caring for the children at the request of the family. These are not small business owners, and these are folks that do not see themselves as small business owners. Many times it's grandma, it's aunt, it could be a close friend or a neighbor. Our providers care for a maximum of three children. Again, one of the important distinctions, and a lot of times, again, just to kind of recognize the unique service that our providers provide, many times they're offering care outside of sort of the normal 9-to-5. They're caring for families that many times do shift work. A lot of times they're caring before school, after school, so there's a variety of settings. So again, just kind of keeping that in mind when we're talking about child care providers, we're talking about a variety of different circumstances. So a little bit about our providers. So they're subject to state and federal health and safety rules. It does help provide a roadmap to make sure that you know, everyone's being respected and cared for, both the folks they're caring for as well as maybe the folks in surrounding neighborhood and homes. Our providers are required to have at least one monitoring visit from the state before they begin providing care, and then after that there's regular ongoing home visits. There's a background check that's necessary for anyone 16 and older in the home. So our providers, as well as anyone else that's in the home, 16 and over. And the providers are required to take pre-service, so this means prior to providing care, prior to being paid, pre-service trainings. So I just state this because I want you to know that becoming a regulated subsidy child care provider is not an easy road. There definitely are things that need to be accomplished before they're able to provide care. I think these pieces are all important, but it's just important for us to recognize all of the steps that are already in existence prior to being able to provide care. And again, these folks, our providers, do not see themselves as small business owners. It's a very different setting. They see themselves as providing a service to a family. Many times it's also for a short duration. This is not something they anticipate doing as a career or as a long-term situation. Just yesterday in the Joint Education Subcommittee, DHS actually presented data showing the impact of increased regulations on the number of license-exempt family child care providers. Recently, the feds passed some additional regulations, and they were able to show the data and the number of child care providers that we've lost either due through natural attrition, but also probably due to the increased regulations. We've lost about 300 child care providers in this specific category. So I just think that it's important when we're talking about barriers. You know, again, what James stated, we really should be creating a system that we're removing barriers, not just for the child care providers that we represent, but of course for the families that are looking for good quality child care, and making sure that we're creating a system that provides child care, not just for 9-to-5 center-based care, but really looking at all of the options that parents might be looking for. I think I'll go ahead and close that. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So were the exempt small providers left out of both the Senate and House bill, or?
The exempt providers, Chair Lively, Representative Huffman, the exempt providers were left out of Senate Bill 1051, and we actually were included in the House bill, correct. we did have some other concerns around some of the other provisions that I think Andrea and Tracy can speak to around the amendment that was passed, and we spoke to that the last time that we were here. But as far as us being included, we were included in 3447.
Okay, thanks.
So I have a question. So we've talked so much recently about employment-related daycare and who qualifies or who doesn't, and this discussion yesterday in the Joint Committee about how that program is rolled out. So your exempt employees, license-exempt employees, can take students, children that are part of the ERDC? I mean, they can take somebody that is eligible for that subsidy?
Chair Lively, yes. Those are the only folks that they care for are families that are within ERDC.
Oh, okay.
And many times what it is a family is qualified for ERDC, and at that moment the family can decide what sort of setting they'd like to place their children in, and they have a choice. They can go to a registered, certified home,
right,
where they could maybe find grandma. And anecdotally, what I will say, too, is many times grandma's already been providing care. Our neighbor has already been providing care, and it's an opportunity for that person to receive a little bit of compensation, because they usually are piecing together care with multiple friends, family, and neighbor, and it's an opportunity to maybe get a little bit of funding to help make that a little bit more of a stable situation.
Thank you. Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Andrea Salinas. I'm the contract lobbyist for Oregon AFSCME Council 75. And thank you for this continuing conversation. I know it's really important to this committee. AFSCME is really trying to, I think, achieve a couple of things, and I think everybody up here is trying to achieve it. Our goal is really to provide families with the needed affordable child care in the communities in which they live. And we know that as housing demands increase and developers try to keep pace with the increased demand for additional housing units, the units that come online will likely be in HOA communities. And condo units are typically more affordable for younger families with small children. And we want to be able to find and strike the right balance of providing additional child care in these communities while keeping our HOA safe and in compliance with those bylaws. So the providers that we represent, they also live in these HOAs. So, you know, they're both residents, but they're also providers. I know we've already had this conversation once in this committee, and we appreciate the work the committee did to pass HB 3447, but I think we do have some concerns with the common wall issues and some of the insurance issues that came up that we feel might prevent child care providers and put some restrictions on whether they actually are able to provide child care or not. And I think there might be a better balance, maybe when we get over to the Senate, if we can't do it here and put it in an amendment here. And I think Tracy will speak more to this, but to be able to address some of those concerns with the HOA. And I don't know that we necessarily fully showed and demonstrated what, like Stacy was saying, what we have to go through in order to be certified providers. Family child care settings are regulated by the state. They have regular inspections from the Early Learning Division's Office of Child Care and the Department of Human Services. The providers and any staff that they employ require a basic level of training each and every year. The training includes basic health and safety, as well as developing curriculum for the programs that include educational and physical activities. And as I mentioned last time, you know, these kids aren't able to kind of run amok all over the, you know, the HOA or even within the house. They have rules about supervising children inside and outside of the house at every moment that the children are in the provider's care. Children aren't left unattended or simply left to their own devices. And the providers are subject to ratios and numbers of children in their care. Concerns have been raised with regards to excess numbers of children in the common areas of HOAs. And I think this is probably where some of the insurance concerns come in. You know, in outdoor areas such as swimming pools, a certified provider must have the required number of square footage inside their home to accommodate the provider to children ratios and number of children under their care. But they also need to have a minimum number of square footage outside the home as well. And with regards to swimming pools and water play, there are really specific rules and regulations that our providers must follow. There are rules on proper diapering and restrictions on swimming ability of the children. There are specific guidelines for the providers and their participation in the swimming activities. Wading pools are strictly not allowed. And there are certain rules around the barriers in which the children must play outside. So I included all of the swimming rules and regulation into the written testimony that I submitted for the committee. But I just wanted to really emphasize, and I think Tracy even brought, like, the stacks of different rules and regulations that our providers must meet, that it's not just simply something that I think, you know, a homeowners association would need to be fearful of. And I think if we actually had this discussion, they would see that we have to meet a lot of requirements. So I realize that SB 1051 is not the only solution needed to help ensure that families have the access to affordable, quality child care. Like Chairman Lively just mentioned, you know, we've been talking about ERDC and lots of different solutions. But AFSCME does urge your support of Senate Bill 1051 with the addition of license exempt.
Great. Thank you, Chair Lively. And I don't know, maybe this is one for Rep. Vile. I don't know. But was the Community Association Institute brought into the conversation around HOAs? Because anytime in this building, I learned early, and the last 10 years that anytime HOAs are mentioned, if something didn't go through the Institute, it has to go through the Institute. So I'm just kind of curious. I don't know that I answered that question.
I don't know. Yeah.
I did not.
I think not.
Okay.
Tracy?
Okay.
So let me just give credit to Tracy. Tracy started this conversation on the Senate side with Senator Boqvist, and we appreciate that the conversation, that you helped start the conversation. And he did yesterday share with me some of the regulations that they have to, that are in place now, and there's more. Those of us that sit on the Ways and Means sub yesterday got some more information about, and it's what we've learned from our division. It's become very much more complex with some of the new background checks and fingerprinting. I mean, the list goes on, and that's part of what drives the budget for early learning on the compliance side. That's why we have so many people trying to comply with the federal regulations and the regulations. So it's absolutely correct. It's very complex, and we're having a real problem with being able
to keep. That's partly what Representative Huffman pointed out. And I had thought there weren't a lot of new ones because I was thinking about the state level, having been around the table the last few years. But it's the federal that has put a lot on. And so you were right in that conversation when I was like, I don't think there's a lot of new regulations. And clearly I was very much wrong.
You were right.
Yeah.
It once happens. Per session.
Yeah.
they throw me a bone. And Mr. Chair, after we finish with this panel, did you say Rep. Vile is willing to come up? Because he and I have worked together on HOA stuff, and I have a bunch of HOAs in my district, and just want to ask
I'm glad you disclosed that ahead of time. But yes, Rep. Vile is here. He's volunteered to he'll come up and run.
He doesn't know what he volunteered for.
No. Sorry, go ahead, Tracy.
No problem. Hi, I'm Tracy Lang, and Chair Lively and the members of the committee, thank you very much for me being here. This has been a little bit of a journey. Before I start, I do want to acknowledge that I listened to the third reading, and I want to thank Rep. Vile for his acknowledgement of our situation and the challenge that put on our family. I brought some other things to kind of create the emotional hook, but I wasn't able to enter them into the exhibits. Imagine on a piece of paper about this big is my 5 acres with my home, and imagine it going to about the size of a dime. And that's what we did this last week. Right, this is the paperwork that we have a new home that occupies about 6,000 square feet of land versus 5 acres. And we're going to be able to care for the kids because this was not about a personal, or it was more about a personal agenda, right? That the kids are important to us. It's a career for my wife, and we take care of special needs kids. That'll be compromised a little bit, but at the end of the day, we're still going to meet the needs of the child care in our community. And that's really what we're asking for as we started the bill. And I apologize that there were some mechanisms and some consulting that perhaps was a lapse in the knowledge of my part. But what we really want is a leveled playing field such that we as providers, and I'll speak for the providers at large, have a seat at the table. I don't want to get a letter that says your insurance is going to go up, and therefore the answer is no. Right? What I want is an opportunity to mitigate and remedy the problem, because as a provider, perhaps I can indemnify the HOA, or I can agree not to use a particular piece of the facility. And the regulations, 56 pages of regulations for certified homes, 26 pages of regulations for registered home. I'm less familiar with licensed. But it's daunting. These are all of the papers. This, if I fan those out for you, these are all the papers that it took us to qualify for the brand new home. There's like 16 documents here that went through the checklist. So just to validate that, you know, it is an arduous process. We're in it because we care about the kids and the family and the community. It generates revenue for my wife. It is a career choice, as I mentioned before. I have passion in the space, and I took the liberty of loading a number of documents into the exhibits for your benefit. They're the same documents that I used for the research that I share with you now. These are state documents. They've been commissioned by the state of Oregon through Portland State University, Oregon State University, Children First, and all these other things. And the big picture is that we need a bold move. We've been behind for 30% for about 10 years. And I ran the math last night. If the demand stays flat, which we know it's not, and we increase our providers by 10% a year, it takes us about 4 years to close that gap. But we know the demand's increasing, and I don't know exactly what it is because I'm not privy to some of the minutia of the data, but I just picked 5%. So if the demand grows by 5% and our providers grow by 10%, it takes 8 years to close the gap. Now, there are idiosyncrasies in there that I'm not accounting for, but it's a big number. And if we chip away at this, it will stay in front of us. It's like that math problem we all hated in junior high school. If a train leaves the station going 20 miles an hour and you leave umpteen minutes later, how long does it take you to catch up? I don't think we could afford that. And the things that we're doing are all great things, quality care and caring for special needs children. The grant number 14, I included that report for your benefit. That came out last year in 2016, and it talked about a few deficiencies. A lot of accolades to Dawn Woods and her organization, which I read through that. But I've read a few other things in there about other things that are going to increase the demand, for example, homeless children. And homeless children is part of the equity part of that conversation. And homeless children, if you start taking care of them for overnight or other durations of the hours, require bathrooms and showers. So that means you would not be able to provide those unless a center care had the ability to provide, you know, late after hours type of care or provide bathrooms for them to exercise some hygiene. That means that demand would shift to home care providers. So there's a bigger picture, I think, about the overall issue at hand, and one of the ways to address that is expanding the scope of the pool of providers, dropping the barriers to make it easy. I'm not saying deregulate. I'm saying make it easier for them to get in. I agree with the challenges with 55 communities and HOA communities. Those things need to be addressed. But I'd rather not be under their purview. I'd rather answer to the state rather than answer to the HOA, because we have different value systems, right? And to James' point, James, I'm sorry, I forgot your last name. There's already a precedent set for foster care homes. They may not be prohibited in any residence within the state of Oregon. Group homes may not be prohibited with any place within the state of Oregon. So those are 24/7 activities, and childcare is less than 24/7. So we're already working through that, and I think that precedent has been set personally. So anyway, I think that's been quite a bit of time for me.
Yes, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. I would also add to the list, ADA federal law makes Alzheimer's homes and a variety of other things a given in any community, regardless of their local rules.
So yep, fair enough. I appreciate that, Representative Huffman.
Any questions for Tracy? Representative Kindergarten, do you have?
I don't know if this is Tracy here, but for everyone, I still want to be clear where the Senate one sits compared to this, the differences, because this is not going forward since the one that's in the Senate is, correct?
So the House bill that we passed is in the Senate now, mm-hmm. And one of the things it includes is what we were talking about earlier, the license exempt that's not in this bill.
Right.
But it also includes the amendments that Representative Vile brought regarding HOA. Those are really
seniors,
the two
55
differences.
And can I ask a question of the foster care? So do the HOAs meant for seniors 55 and up, do they allow foster kids in that or no kids at all?
Chair Lively and Representative Kenny Geyer, I'm not familiar with those specific regulations. I can answer just a little bit about the differences between those two bills. Other than the license exempt and the adoption of the amendment, there is no difference between the two bills.
Okay.
They're identical. So I can appreciate that that some of that disparity. And to be completely frank, there are elements of the amendment that I think are pretty good. What I'm concerned about is that when we leave the room and all of us go home, the community will be left to administer and understand and regulate those things. And preferentially, I'd prefer not to be answering to the HOA. I'd prefer to be answering to the state. We've already signed our documents. We know what the rules and regulations are of the HOAs, mm-hmm. right? So.
Okay. Any other questions? Do you have a question, Mr. Malmstrom, or just?
No, okay. Not a bill.
Okay, thank you.
Does it require oral health? I think that's where Rep. Hayden
is. Oh, yes, we'll have to get that in there.
I want 2 minutes of toothbrushing.
Well, there's room for another page in this. Feel free. Absolutely.
We need to add emergency clause and oral health to every bill, right?
Every bill.
And my job will be done.
Thank you all. Thanks for the conversation.
Thank you very much.
And you have the 3-year rollout.
Chair Lively,
yes.
As Representative Viles coming up, I was just thinking through this, and I know that the House bill enjoyed broad support, about as broad as it can get, if I remember. And
this committee especially.
But I do have a lot of HOAs in my district, and I don't think I have had a single year pass without multiple constituents calling about their HOAs. So I learned early on that there is a legal group that works on anything HOA. And in fact, I happened to reach out to Rep. Vile recently, getting some information, knowing that he had some history there. So that's why I appreciate you being here.
Okay.
Thanks. Chair Lively, members of the committee, Rich Vile, House District 26, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. I just had a deja vu moment, Rep. Huffman. When I was in law school in 1979, I sat at this desk and testified on the condominium bill, ORS Chapter 100 now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I just flashed back to that Barbara Conza. I was working for Barbara. Barbara was the head of the condominium section at the Oregon Real Estate Division, and I was her law clerk. And I came in and got to participate there. So that's how long I've been doing this. I'm not going to try to add up the number of
years. None of the furniture or anything's changed, has it?
It really hasn't. I think the chairs may be updated, but otherwise it's...
And I was going to mention Barbara a little bit ago, but we had never met, and I didn't realize this was her. So
anyway. Yeah, Barbara Kahns, who has forgotten more about homeowner association law than the rest of us in the state will ever know. So we're grateful that she has been able to help us all this time. We've got a group, as Rep. Huffman said, called the Oregon Condominium Working Group. And we've been around since the late 70s. We participated in the adoption of the Oregon Condominium Act, the Oregon Planned Community Act. We often refer to ourselves as the SASE group, self-appointed, self-important. It is mostly lawyers, managers of homeowner associations, accountants that deal with the reserve studies for homeowners associations, and members of the boards of directors of homeowners associations. That group typically is consulted anytime there's an HOA bill that goes through the building. This is a kind of a different situation, and as you heard from Tracy, this arose out of a very unfortunate situation, and frankly, if I'd have been called upon to give advice to the association that he and his family were in, I don't think we'd have probably ever had to face this issue, because they'd have recognized that they had a duty to make a reasonable accommodation for what was being requested there. The bill, however, as we worked it through 3447, I think has done some very good things and very much clarified the fact that just like group homes, we're now treating child care facilities as something other than a trade or business, because many homeowner associations have in the documents that the developer created a prohibition on running a trade or business. And by creating this as a category that's exempt from that regulation, homeowner associations don't have to fear being sued by one of their owners for failing to enforce their covenants. So we really have, I think, accomplished with the working 3447 and the amendments that we were able to adopt there a very good bill. 1051 is exactly the same bill without the set of amendments, and we did get in that exempt, that three or fewer family and friends kind of provision there, and I think that was a very important provision. So I'm grateful that we've had the opportunity to air this thing, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So we have a question? Yes.
Just a comment. I really appreciate this information. I didn't know the background that was going on, and I, even though I supported the bill previously, I have a much greater comfort level now, because even though it can be frustrating, I can appreciate, because I will admit I was on a HOA board at one time, and some of my executive colleagues on the board made a wrong comment. We found ourselves in federal court downtown Portland. I did not ask to be there. I knew what the law was, but we got drug in. So I appreciate you getting involved in this and helping to kind of mediate and smooth things out a bit.
Thank you.
So, Rep. Vile, so we talked about this the last minute, but I just want to review, because the concerns still are around the insurance, and the amendment addressed the amount of insurance, but the insurance, the Commonwealth, so part of the problem is there's multiple different types of HOAs. They're not all, I mean, some of them are like where Tracy lived, acreage, and you got it, and some are town halls side by side with one that I was in. So there's multiple ones, and so the concern goes back to the application of this across all of those, I guess, and how does it work, or is there risk, more risk in one type than there is in the other?
It is, Chair Lively, members of the committee, it's impossible really to answer that question without looking at each individual project. But let me give you just a flavor for this. Condominiums typically only include the airspace, the interior wall, floor, ceiling airspace of a person's unit as that person's sole property. The rest of it is common area. Now, it may be limited common area. For example, you have a deck outside your unit. That's limited common area. The homeowner association still maintains it, so they're going to have some rules about don't water your plant on it so that you rot the deck out. But you're going to be able to use it generally as you see fit. Other than, for example, things like noise that may take place on it, cooking fires that may take place on it. Sometimes in many projects, play equipment that might be particularly noisy and bother other owners that are in very close proximity.
Or hanging your clothes, that's been a big issue.
Yeah, clotheslines, yeah. That's one that's been there. Many years ago, some of you who have been around this building a while may remember satellite dishes were a big deal. And we actually ended up adopting special rules so that no one would be prohibited from getting a signal. We've done all those things, but when you have common area, it is insured by the homeowners association. And so the association is constantly imposed upon by the insurance company, who's in business to collect premium and deny claims. That's why they're there. And so they're underwriting their insurance policy based on the risks that they see might happen as a result of what you might do there. So if you have a child care facility that may expose more children to a particular traffic pattern in say one association but not in another, this association may find itself with a higher premium than this association. And so what we've done in the rules is say you can adopt reasonable rules that will prevent this from becoming a problem for all owners, but that is only so long as they do not have the effect of prohibiting or restricting the unit as the use premises of, for example, an exempt child care facility. So I think we've tried to be very balanced in the way we've written the amendments. And no matter which project it is, there's always going to be those questions of reasonableness, and every project's different. But the law is going to impose upon the association that reasonable standard. And I think that's about the best we can do, Chair Lively.
Representative Hayden, please.
All right, I'll give you a question. Thank you.
Okay.
So just a theoretical example so I can get my head around what you're thinking on reasonable is. Common area, swimming pool, park, something that in a home association might have seniors swim hour or something. Mm-hmm. Would it be reasonable then to say that during certain hours of the day, the clients of a daycare facility could not access a common area? Would that be a reasonable thing to say?
I think that, again, so long as it did not completely eliminate the opportunities that might be available for use of that common area, it would be reasonable to stay with our restrictions, for example. But another restriction, Rep. Hayden, that you might see is many of these associations say no child can be at the pool without their parent. And they actually try to enforce that one-to-one ratio of parent to child because, again, insurance companies are often imposing a higher premium. So it might be that the association says, sorry, the child care facility can't have kids at the pool unless that maybe it's a 1-to-2 ratio or 1-to-3 ratio, whatever the ratio that is required by their policy is also imposed on the child care facility, just like it would be on any other family.
Sure.
That seems reasonable. And what might seem unreasonable is to say that children can't use it from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. the exact hours of the child care facility.
Right. And Chair Lively, Rep. Kinnegar, absolutely. Those, and we face those things already. We have many situations where sometimes well-meaning, not always well-meaning, members of the board of director decide they're bothered by something and they adopt rules, not even with respect to child care facilities, and we've got to rein them back.
Follow up?
Sure, go ahead.
Follow up. Thank you, Chair Greenlee. So,
Chair Greenlee.
You know I'm about his
Chair
age.
Lively. No. I'll leave that one alone.
Okay, would you?
That's a badge of honor.
Yeah. Home associations, I would probably not be successful in one, so I don't know anything about them. But
you would not.
I would
tell
not.
You right now, you would not.
When they share fees, say a home association says we're going to have a fee to use the pool or a fee to pay for the park or a fee, and everybody shares in that, is there some statute in Oregon law that requires that to be even? What I'm getting at is, could they say, yes, you can use the pool daycare facility, but your fee is going to be different than your neighbor?
Yeah, Chair Lively, Representative Hayden, this comes up all the time, not just in child care facilities, but all sorts of situations where somebody like my family moves in with a whole bunch of kids and suddenly mm-hmm. they're saying, well, we got to impose upon them a bigger fee. The law does not prohibit the association from imposing user fees that might be tied to the number of people, et cetera. However, it's a very, very high bar to reach, and typically both Chapter 100 and Chapter 94 specifically state that you have to have in your condominium or planned community documents specific provisions about how common expenses are allocated, and you can't change those without a supermajority vote. So it happens very rarely. The law doesn't prohibit it, but it's not likely, and I can't imagine that it even would be coming up in this context. If it did, that's another set of board of directors that needs a slap on the wrist.
Fair enough.
Could a person that is in one of these homeowner association and operating care facility, could they, if there was a question about the insurance, could they indemnify the homeowner association by having their own policy or coverage?
That also comes up, Chair Lively, and it occasionally is allowed, or I've seen special provisions written in underwriting of insurance policies for a particular unit that would allow that unit to pay a surcharge on the common premium. Possible, probably, again, not likely. Honestly, hearing the testimony of the folks that came before me and the level of regulation that we have for these kinds of facilities in Oregon, I really doubt that we're going to see much conflict as a result of this. I don't think it's going to change much. We've already got hundreds, maybe thousands of foster children in homeowners associations all over the state. We've got child care taking place, particularly the exempt kind of provisions where family and friends are happening. If we get a big one where somebody rolls in with a 20 kid in a condominium, I can see where we may have something like that, but not likely.
Okay. Any other questions for Representative Bio? Okay. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of the committee, Chair.
Thank you. Now you can go to judiciary.
Yeah.
Walk slow.
Okay. Seeing nobody else has signed up, I'm going to close the public hearing on what's the bill number? 1051. Senate Bill 1051. Anything else to come before the committee today? Or we could just sit here and wait until 2:15 when Liz has to leave, or?
They moved it up to 2:05. So
okay, then. We're glad to accommodate
perfect.
That.
Thank you. All right.
Okay. We'll adjourn, then.
Great.
We'll adjourn, then.
Great.
Thank you. All right. Okay.